You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Anthony McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvage.
Hey everybody, this is John Elter, J. Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Brendan Lear. Brendan, how are you doing this morning?
I'm very well, Kelsey. How are you?
I'm doing not bad, thank you. Brendan, we've got another stacked show coming up today. It's looking pretty good, buddy.
I know, it's kind of over the hump, the MMA hump, and now we can settle down to like one show a week, hopefully.
That's
not our show, of course, but right. One MMA show a week. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we've got Travis Galbraith coming on the program. He's the King of the Cage, Canada light heavyweight champion, and he, of course, had his Pride debut this past weekend against Nakamura, and he'll be joining us to tell us his thoughts. And then as well, we're going to have Alex Schoenhauer on the program, who's been fighting in the IFL and having some success there, former Ultimate Fighter television star, Alex, and he'll be on the program, too. He's fighting on November 2nd at the upcoming card, so a couple interesting guests, let's hope.
Let's hope. You sound kind of down, though, Kelsey. Are you going to be able to pick up some momentum into the latter part of the show?
Yeah, no, I'm not down. I'm feeling a little groggy. I had trouble sleeping last night, man. I don't know why.
As many of the viewers or many of our listeners know, Kelsey has to sleep in a very elaborate white noise machine in a saline solution. So something wrong with one of those variables?
Yeah, my sleep deprivation chamber is out of commission.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that. Maybe they should make a movie about you now.
Well, and plus I haven't had much coffee yet this morning, so I usually have a couple cups of coffee in the morning, and I just breaking into my first one right now, so hopefully as the show goes on, I'll get more energetic.
I'll do my best to pick up the slack.
Yeah, it's about time you try to carry your weight. I can't carry the show all the time.
I understand. I'll do my best, Kelsey.
All right. Well, let's get to it. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
The International Fight League returns to Portland's Memorial Coliseum Thursday, November 2nd for the World Team Championship Semifinals. Hometown hero Matt Lindland leads his team, the Wolfpack, into battle against Boss Rutan's Anacondas. And Pat Miletic pits his team, the Silverbacks, against Carlos Newton's Dragon.
Plus two super fights you don't want to miss.
You don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the Full Contact Fighter Shop, we have all the MMA gear that you see so many of your favorite professional fighters wearing. NHB Extreme Fight shorts, camouflage board shorts, corduroy and camo hats, hooded sweatshirts, to the classic FCF t-shirts, Full Contact Fighter clothing is the number one mixed martial arts brand that any MMA fan must have. Now open is the FCF Sticker and Banner Shop. We have all your favorite IFL team clothing, plus a great assortment of low-priced Pride and MMA DVDs are now all available at the FCF Shop. To check it out, head to www.fcfighter.com, pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or call 516-676-0033. That number, again, 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is Mr. Alex Schoenhauer. Alex, how are you doing today?
Good.
Now, Alex, my first question for you, you've got the fight coming up November 2nd against Aaron Stark from the Wolfpack. You, of course, member of the IFL's team, Anacondas. Are you training with the team? Whereabouts are you guys training right now?
We're down in L.A. We come down here usually 2 weeks before, about 3 weeks before the fight, to train with Boss. We come down and train 2 weeks straight. With the team, and we kind of step it up, and I think it makes a big difference.
Alex, following up that question, there seems to be some talk from some of the coaches and some of the fighters that there was going this year in the IFL there was going to be more of a concerted effort to train together as teams, whereas last year some teams came together a little bit, and then some fighters actually didn't train at all and just fought for their teams. Is this something that the IFL itself has thought about, or the teams just made a decision to train more together?
Well, I think, you know, it's basically up to the coaches, but as the first fights tipped off, the first championship, we saw the Mirjo's team, how they perform, and they trained up together as a team, and that made a big difference in their performance. So we basically kind of, you know, looked at that, and we knew that for us to, together as a team, we had to train together. And most of our team was in Las Vegas, and the other part of it in Canada and in L.A. So we told ourselves that, you know, we need to get together as a team, train as a team, so then when we fight as a team, we come together and support, you know, our support that team. And you can see that the performance of our last fights, it makes a big difference. And all the coaches on the different teams, I think, understand that too. And you can see that a lot of the fighters have been moving around from team to team because where they live, it fits better for them to train there with the team. Like Devin Cole, he was fighting with Murray Smith. Now he's in Portland. I think, you know, he lives in Portland, so it's easier for him to train with the team and makes a difference.
Alex, you mentioned that you've been training with the Anacondas now for a few weeks. Who have you been training with prior to that? Who's your usual training partners outside of the Anacondas themselves?
Mainly, you know, I train in Vegas, and I try to diversify my training with whoever I can get. But mainly it's Mike Pyle, Jay Hiron, Forrest Griffin. I had the opportunity to do a lot of training to work on my wrestling with Kevin Randleman. And basically I work my jiu-jitsu over at Combat Club. So I kind of bounce around a little bit, but mainly with Forrest, Mike Pyle, Jay Hiron, and then Kevin Randleman.
Alex, we talked to Forrest a couple, I guess it was a month or so ago now, or 2 months ago, and we asked if he was at the quote-unquote UFC center there, and there seemed to be some confusion as to whether or not that was an actual gym that people trained at, or sometimes they train there, or sometimes not. So in Vegas, do you guys have a proper training facility, or you just bounce around?
Well, we kind of bounce around. We train whatever gyms are available. Now we mainly train at the Las Vegas Combat Club. But then we usually train Forrest to have access to the UFC training center. So since he needs the training partners, we kind of bounce over there and train with him when we can. If not, we go to Zion's training center or to JSEC. So whatever gym is available, enough of the guys on the team know a lot of the guys that run the different gyms in Las Vegas. So we have access to most of the gyms there.
Now, let's get into your upcoming fight a little bit, Alex. You're taking on the Wolfpack's light heavyweight, Aaron Stark. Obviously, a Wolfpack member, I would guess that you're expecting him to have some strong wrestling capabilities, coached by Matt Lindland. What is your game plan going in against a guy like Aaron Stark, Alex, and what do you know about him?
You know, I don't know much about him other than, you know, the normal. He's obviously a wrestler. He trains with Matt Lindland. And so, obviously, he's going to have a world knowledge of takedowns and wrestling. I'm not too afraid of his jiu-jitsu. I've seen him fight. His hands, I don't fear anything there. So basically, just avoid the takedown and then stand up and, you know, try to get a knockout. I train for this fight just the same way I train for every other fight. My confidence is a little bit better, obviously, since I've been able to fight some big name wrestlers like Travis View. He's a much stronger wrestler, I believe, and then Hamanaka, which is was supposed to be an Olympic wrestler from Japan. He's very quick. I was able to stop him. So I think, you know, it's going to be a good fight. Aaron Stark is a strong guy, and he's going to come out to fight. He's going to be ready, and looking forward to it.
Have you ever thought about moving down in weight? Like you said, you fought all these big wrestlers, and you actually done very well against these big wrestlers. But you always seem to give up a slight bit of size and a slight bit of strength. Have you ever thought about moving down, or is that something that you would entertain?
Well, you see, the one time I moved down twice was when the UFC asked me to drop weight for the show to 185. I've never fought at 185. I used to be like 250 back in college. So I found out that dropping to 185, I really don't perform that well, at least those times. Maybe dropping weight at a different, you know, with somebody that knows how to cut weight better with a little bit more experience, I might do that. But I'm comfortable fighting at 205, and I don't think so much as giving up, you know, 10, 20 pounds is going to make a difference as long as you're a better fighter. You know, I want to be where the 10, 15 pounds don't make a difference. I just want to be a better athlete, better fighter. So I'm dangerous on the ground. I'm dangerous standing up. and then that just 10-pound difference is not going to make a difference.
Now, you mentioned the wins over Trazayuf and Kazuhiro Hamanaka, and the win over Travis. I was fortunate enough to see a heel hook, highlight reel heel hook win over Travis for those people who didn't see it. And Alex, for you, I mean, you mentioned those are two big names. Which was the better win for you? Which one ranks higher in your career so far?
You know, they both worked to my advantage because Hamanaka has fought in Pride, he's fought in K1, he beat Cabbage, and he's a really world-class wrestler, so I mean, that works good. Here in the States, obviously, Travis View fought in the UFC and stuff, so that's a big one, even though he was dominating me on the ground when he was on top, and I was able to pull it off. He made that one little mistake, and it changed the fight around. But, I think that beating both of those guys, it works in my benefit. I don't know if it's one better than the other, but I think they're just both big names, and they come from different backgrounds, so it works just as good.
Yeah.
Alex, moving on, when you were obviously one of the, competed in the reality show, The Ultimate Fighter, but you also moved away from the UFC fairly quickly after the show, unlike many of the other fighters who continue to fight on regardless of their wins or losses. Can you describe to us the events that unfolded after the reality show where you lost in the finals?
Well, I knew, coming off of that loss in the finals, I knew that the UFC had such a large pool of fighters that to wait around for them to call you, it could be 6 months to a year. I mean, if you look at the turnaround rate for a lot of these fighters, they're just waiting around. And I knew if I wanted to be an MMA fighter and I wanted to improve in my skills, I needed to be taking fights. So I asked to be able to get released out of my contract so I could go and fight and get that experience that I needed to go forward. And lucky enough, they allowed me, to be like, yeah, okay, we'll let you go. And I told them, whenever you want me to come back, more than willing to come back and fight for you. So that allowed me to go. I was fighting twice a month for like 6 months to get that experience. And then I was able to, I got a phone call that some people looked into and said, let's put this guy in the NFL. And it was a great opportunity. Not only I was on the first reality series for fighting, MMA fighting, but now on the first ever fighting league. So, it's a great opportunity, and I'm grateful for that.
Now, you mentioned the opportunities that the Ultimate Fighter Show afforded you, and you have gone on and become a higher-profile member of the IFL. Do you feel, Alex, that because of your participation in the Ultimate Fighter, that has helped your career as far as, when people look at events in the IFL, for example, you're probably one of the names that immediately stands out?
Yeah, of course, being on TV, on the media, and Ultimate Fighter, that definitely helped my popularity, helped me get my name out there. So, definitely helped a lot. It was like the first start to get into the IFL. So I got a bit more popular, and people knew who I was, and were able to see a little bit of my skills. Obviously, I needed to get a lot of improvement from there, which I worked on. But it all pays off.
I was going to ask you, Alex. In the show, you were kind of portrayed as more of a stand-up fighter. Whether or not that's an accurate portrayal, I'm not really sure, and you can answer that question. But it seems like, since your participation on The Ultimate Fighter, your skills have become much more well-rounded. At least it seems. Is that true? And where have you developed as a fighter since leaving that show?
When I got on the show, I was only really training for like 4 months, so I was pretty green at the sport. I've taken some fights, but they're pretty like amateur, and a couple other bigger fights, but I was just doing it for fun. I really wasn't training with anybody. After the show, I decided to really give it a shot and try to do it full time. So that's where my skills started going up, because I was able to train every day, twice a day, with high-level fighters, and that's kind of where I was improving. My stand-up skills at the time on The Ultimate Fighter were decent, but I don't think they compare to what they are now. Obviously, I still need to do improvements, but since I was able to train every day for a year, twice a day, I was able to jump up higher. And, I work on my jiu-jitsu, I work on my stand-up skills with Boss Rutan, who's a great coach, and I'm continuously improving, like, every day. Now I'm working on my wrestling with like Kevin Randleman and Mark Kerr and other guys in the wrestling industry that really helped me out a lot. So being exposed to all these you know, top level athletes have given me their knowledge and helping me out, allowed me to continuously grow and improve in the MMA world.
Alex, do you in the year 18 months following the first Ultimate Fighter, many of the fighters in that coming from that series had limited success in the ring when they were fighting people from outside of the series. But now, in the last year or so, there's been an enormous amount of success with fighters like Swick and Florian and Sanchez and those types that now have really legitimized the fighters coming out of the reality series. Do you in some sense feel vindicated by their success in terms of being one of those early fighters yourself?
Yeah, I think so. You know, a lot of these fighters, you know, you see the guys that kind of, from the show, they dropped off quickly, and then the other ones that kind of keep going. Good examples, Mike Swick, you know, Chris Lieben, they've done really well for themselves. And, you know, I think like everything else, it takes a little time for you to adjust to get into your groove, and then from there you start growing, and both fighters have done really well, and so, you know, it's good.
You mentioned training with Boss Rudin as being an advantage for you in your career, and for those people, you know, maybe give us a little bit of insight what it is like to train with a legend, one of the, you know, I guess, founding forefathers of mixed martial arts, or especially here in North America, one of the more recognizable earlier mixed martial artists. What is it like, Alex, to train with a legend like Boss Rudin?
Yeah, it's where I start. It's great. From, you know, the conditioning he puts us through is just like, I've never done anything. Even on the show, you know, on the Ultimate Fighter show, for example, we did pretty hard, tough conditioning. But what we do with Boss, he just puts us through a level higher of conditioning that mixes in the reality brings the reality of a fight into the conditioning and drills and punching and a lot of technique that really makes you develop better, quicker, and I think it shows in our fighting, and it will show in our next event against the Wolfpack. It's good. Every day we're doing something new. Every day we go to the gym, it's not the same thing. It's always a new drill, a new circuit, you know, sprints, running hell. It's always like, he always pushes to the limit. Right when you think you can't go anymore, you go some more. So it's good. It's hard, but it's really good.
Does he make you drill those high kick splits that he does at the end of fights?
That's for our victory dad, you know.
And can everyone do the splits on your team?
Yeah, we're working on it. Yeah, by the time we win the championship, we gotta be able to do that so we can do a victory dad.
We had Boss on the program, I guess now, yeah, it was a few months ago. And Boss claims that the El Wapo side of him, the parting life that he used to lead, has diminished over the last couple of years. Alex, maybe you can give us a little bit of insight into that. Is that true? Is he still El Wapo? Or is he more of a family guy now?
Well, El Wapo, I think, he's always El Wapo, but now, you know, he's taken a lot of time out of, I think, his life to train the team and stuff, so he's really concentrating on wanting us to do well. So, I mean, obviously there's not much time to do other stuff when you're training your team so much, and I think that's, you know, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So, are we gonna see Boss fight again? What's his condition like with his with those injuries he sustained earlier on?
He's been training with us, you know, pushing us through all these trainings and stuff. So he's looking good. He hasn't mentioned anything about fighting. So, but I'm sure, you know, we might see him back around. He has the itch of wanting to fight again, but so I guess we'll just have to wait and see what comes of it.
Brendan, do you have anything else for Alex?
That's it, Alex. Good luck in your fight, in your upcoming fight.
Yeah, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
No problem. Thanks, you guys.
Okay, take care.
Some things are worth fighting for. 14 American mixed martial artists will battle in the jungles of Costa Rica. 7 will earn the right to fight the Russian Red Devil Team in front of the world, live on pay-per-view. Only they know what this fight means to them, and they'll get their chance to prove it on Bodog Fight. The fight begins September 19th. Check local listings or visit bodogfight.com for more details.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world.
This is Spencer the Kingfisher, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is the gladiator, Travis Galbraith. Returned back home to Edmonton, I take it. Travis, you back in the gym?
Yeah, we're straight back to the gym.
Wow,
that's, here we know.
That's quite the turnaround. Travis, you know, what were your thoughts? You took the fight on short notice, going up against Kazuhiro Nakamura, a highly regarded, highly noted light heavyweight fighter. What were your thoughts? I guess my first question actually for you is, how did this process begin? When did you first hear that you might be having your debut in Pride?
It was actually, I think, exactly 7 days before Pride. So I only had some, like, 3 days of actual training that I could do before the fight.
Wow.
They wanted me there so early, right, for interviews and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So that's plenty of time to get ready for a guy like Nakamura, eh?
Yeah, well, when Pride calls, I mean, you drop everything, ain't nothing going to stand in your way.
What were your impressions of it? Tell us about the experience. So 7 days out, you get the call, and what happened after that? Walk us through the week up to the ring.
Yeah, well, 7 days before, I got the call from Ken, from KOTC, Bill Mahood, and my manager, Jamie Leonard. And all three of them at the same time were just like, whoa, you're going to Pride. And I didn't believe them at first. I kind of thought they were all just playing with me as a little bit of a joke. And then, so the minute I got, like, I was driving back from Vancouver when I got the call. I got home at about 10 o'clock, and I just went straight to the gym and started just working my cardio because I was, I've been down for a little bit. Ever since I found out that I wouldn't be fighting James Lee, I haven't been doing anything. And then Rodrigo Munraka was here. We were training. We started training full time here. I was going three times a day for about 2 hours a day. So I could only get about 3 days of training in before the fight. And then they flew me out because they wanted me there early for press conferences and such. So I didn't really get a whole lot of even training time. I got to the fight card. It was a bit of a stressful thing. I was starstruck. The day before the fight, we did the weigh-ins, and at the weigh-ins, they passed me the microphone to talk, and I almost puked. I was so nervous. It was bad. I was fighting down the puke, and I was able to get that through. The whole time, my head was on a swivel. I was like, oh, Vanderlei Silva. It was unbelievable. Kevin Randleman, everybody was there. I didn't know what to do. And then, I was so nervous. I was pacing in the back there just before the fight. And, I didn't even get a chance to warm up before the fight. We did the intro, and I thought I'd at least have like 15, 20 minutes to start warming up. And they're like, oh, you can't go back to your locker room after they announced me from Canada. I had to sit in the back because I was the second fight out. So I didn't get a chance to warm up, but regardless, I sucked it up, tried to do what I could, warming up in the back there, walked, then we did the intro. On the intro again, I felt like puking. I was just like, I can't believe it, all these screaming fans, everybody, it was like, my nerves were just, the whole time, it's fried from the whole trip, and then get in the ring and got the business.
Now, Travis, like you mentioned, you didn't have any time to train. Your last fight was in June where you won the King of the Cage light heavyweight Canada title against Ricardo Francois, and that was in June. So I take it then, you know, you mentioned that the fight with James Lee fell through. So how much had you been actually preparing for a fight? I mean, how many weeks had you been not training?
I stopped preparing about two weeks before the call. I've just been working with, because I got a couple of my guys fighting on cards, right? So all I've been doing was working with these guys and holding pads and stuff like that for them. And so
I basically stopped everything.
Stopped my diet, stopped everything, because they told me that the fight wasn't going to happen with James Lee. So I was kind of bummed out about that. I didn't really want to do anything at all other than just work with my guys because that fight's coming up. And they got the call, and it just everything was back on. I went and talked to a fitness and conditioning coach. I was just like, I need every little ounce of help that I can get. I need to anything, any kind of, you know what I mean, secret training or anything that's going to help me bring my cardio up in a short amount of time. So all we did basically for those 3 days was like lots and lots and lots of cardio.
Yeah.
Just killed myself with the cardio to try to get my wind up. And I was actually even surprised that I was able to make it to the second round. My gas is so bad.
Now, going through the fight itself, you mentioned off-air that you think that if you had more time to prepare, things could have been different.
Oh,
certainly, you hung in there. What are your thoughts on the fight itself?
I'm not going to take anything away from Nakamura because he's a very respectful guy, and I really liked him. And he's definitely a tough competitor, but I do feel that if I had more notice for training, I could beat him. I think I could beat him fairly easily, too, if I was on top of my game.
Yeah.
I felt way stronger than him. He tried to take me down. There was nothing on him. The only time he was able to get the takedown was near the end of the first round when I was already coming to the end of my tank. So it was, I felt really good going into it. I was surprisingly enough, considering how nerve struck I was. But once I got into the ring, I just zoned out on him, didn't pay attention to the fans, anything like that, and just try to do what I do.
So Travis, I have to ask you, seeing as it's my preference always to train and fight with no warm up, how did that work out for you?
I'm not used to it. I'm used to getting a little bit of a sweat on before I head out, right? I felt really stiff going out there. It's not my thing, right? I don't like to get going too hard, but I like to get a good sweat on and stay warm and limber before I head out to the...
One of the things that people have been commenting about the Pride show is it's quite a spectacle in terms of the introductions and the fanfare and the amount of crowd there. Have you ever been to the UFC, for example, and how did that compare with your experience of different shows? Were you slightly starstruck by the fanfare?
I was blown away by Pride. Like I said before, man, I was trying to fight back, vomiting a few times. I was so, at first, going into the fight, it's like, I don't belong here, I don't belong here, I don't belong here, not yet, not yet, not yet. And then, I learned so much from that loss. I learned that even though, if I'm in fight season and they decide I want to fight for this time of year, that I gotta be ready to go no matter what, because you never know when you're gonna get the call. And it just drove me to be more hungry and to be more aggressive and get back to the gym. So right after that, I was just like, I gotta get back to the gym. I gotta start training. The fans, everything, when they announced my name and being from Canada at the initial introduction, I just had a course of energy just running through me. I was just like, oh, man, I don't know if you've ever had it where you're just like goosebumps and everything, right? You're just blown away by the size of the show.
Kelsey and I only have one another to cheer for us, so not really.
Yeah. Travis, a lot of your successes in your career so far, you're kind of known as a strong, heavy, or light heavyweight, ground and pound. You've been working on your jiu-jitsu with Rodrigo Mandaruca and Brad Cardinal. What was the game plan going in against someone like Nakamura? You knew that, he's a judoka. What was your plan? What was your corner telling you to try to do against him?
Well, the one thing that we did work on a lot was the tie-up defense, right? Because we knew that he was going to try to get me to the side and, Uchimata or something like that, throw me to do a nice hip toss. And at the beginning of the round, I was doing really good at fending off his tie-ups. My whole plan was I was actually going to come up with a flying knee because I didn't watch him, but my trainers told me that they've seen a few of his fights and that he always drops his head when he starts to unload, right? So I was hoping to catch that, but when it came out after the bell rang, I was just like, oh, no, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right. I can't come up with the knee, right? I was very hesitant to let a lot of things go, right?
Robbie Lawler stole that from you anyway.
Yeah. He took that right away, so that was a beautiful flying knee by Robbie Lawler.
What's next for you, Travis? I mean, the commentators, I don't know if you
were able to see Tate fight. I haven't had a chance to watch it, so.
Yeah, well, the commentators are very complimentary of your performance, you know, making, obviously they have no final say in whether or not Pride brings you back, but, you know, they're alluding to the fact that they thought that Pride would probably bring you back, but you're also the Canadian King of the Cage light heavyweight champion. Do you know what's, do you have anything on the horizon coming up?
James Lee. I'd love to get a shot at that belt. Like, I dream about it. I need that belt, you know. I've never been more hungry than I am now. When I first started fighting, it was kind of a game for me, you know what I mean? Just, you know, something to do on the side. But as you know, with, like I said, with this loss, I've learned so much from it. It's just made me even more hungry to strive to be the better fighter, right? So I'm hoping that James Lee's on the horizon. I tried to get a fight after him because Prince George is my hometown. On the fight card, but I guess KOTC and are having trouble finding someone that would like me to fight.
Right. Have you settled now comfortably in at 205? You seem to have fought all over the map. You fought, and it certainly, there was big fanfare at Pride, but you've certainly been in against world-class competitors like Joe Dorkson and George St. Pierre and Jonathan Goulet. So, but you fought all over the map from 170 to 205 now. Are you settling in nicely at 205?
Oh, 205 is my home weight. Like, I tried to fight at 170 twice, and both times I didn't turn out the way I was. It was just, that's too much weight for me to lose. Naturally, like, my family's all big guys. So, to try to be that lean and that small just wasn't good for me at all. It was also a big, like, mental game to try to get down to that weight. Oh, it's so brutal. But the 205 division is my division. I'm gonna stay here. And, I feel so strong at this weight. I feel comfortable at this weight. And I don't see myself going anywhere else from there.
Travis, you were scheduled to fight Victor Valimaki back in March, and I talked to you a couple times since then for various stories for FCF, but you still mentioned that you wanted to fight Victor. He, of course, has gone on to become the light heavyweight champion of Maximum Fighting Championship, a kind of rival promotion, if you will, of your promotion, that you're the champion, King of the Cage. Do you still want to fight Victor? He's gone on, and he most recently beat Vernon White. That would be a great high-profile matchup here in Canada. Do you think there's any chance that we could... That fight could be put together.
I will never fight for Maximum. If they want to bring him into KOTC, that's totally up to Ken, right?
Yeah.
But as far as promotions go, I fight for King of the Cage, and King of the Cage is my home, right? So it's just a matter of whoever they want me to fight, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm feeling better. I'm getting more confident as time goes on. And all my other fights, I've never had my chin tested like I have in this fight. Right, and it's just I'm getting more and more confident as time goes on. So now that this fight's over, if I got a chance to go back to Pride, the nerves wouldn't be an issue whatsoever. Right, I just sink into that.
So Travis, after the introduction, are you and you have all those nerves? Are you looking across at Fedor and saying he's probably as scared as I am right now?
No, that guy's one scary cat, man. Cool. I don't think I've seen his facial expression change other than just to say, you know what I mean, to say a few words other than when he's talking. But you look into that guy's eyes and you see ice.
Well, Travis, like, for those people who, you know, a lot of people weren't familiar with you, especially down in the States, you're more well-known up here in Canada where, of course, you are one of the champions up here. But for those people who aren't familiar with you, Travis, maybe tell us a little bit about your background. You mentioned the fact that you only started training seriously fairly recently, actually. It was more of a hobby for you. And tell us about where you've been training and a little bit about Rodrigo Mataruca and Brad Cardinal, who you've been training with mostly lately.
Well, it was about a year ago that I actually started taking this seriously. Like, whereas before, all my other fights were kind of, you know, I was with my friends saying, I can do this. I started training Prince George. With Bill Mahood, me and him actually started the Prince George Fight Club, and at that point in time in my life, all I wanted to do was just have fun and party, right, being a young guy, and it was more for bragging rights, but I've kind of found, you know, my niche, something that I'm fairly good at, and so I moved to Edmonton for work, and when I got here, I just started working with Kyle Cardinal, and...
Sorry, Carl, not Brad, sorry.
Yeah. With started with a little bit of jiu-jitsu with him, just hone it up, and I realized how much I actually did not know. Right? I kind of was walking around with a bit of a big, but I'm a little more humble now. And he introduced me to Rodrigo, and Rodrigo, for my last fight, Rodrigo actually moved in with me for 2 weeks. And now my home gym is I'm training at a BodyQuest in Edmonton. Me and Kyle Cardinal and Rodrigo put together our own fight team, Triple Threat. And you see the rest of history from there.
Is Rodrigo, has he relocated to Edmonton, or is he still out of Winnipeg?
I'm trying to convince that guy to pull up stakes and move to Edmonton.
Yeah.
Like, we got at my gym alone, like, because Kyle has his jiu-jitsu club over at Sherwood Park, but he also trains here. And I've been trying to convince him that we got more guys that want to fight, and he doesn't want a peg. We've got a big jiu-jitsu school here, lots of guys that would love to have him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, like I said, I just keep throwing it at him. Come and pull up stakes, pull up stakes. I think my game would jump another few notches if I had the guy here full-time, right?
Yeah. And, of course, Rodrigo Mundaruca is the jiu-jitsu instructor for such more famous MMA names like Joe Dirksen or Christoph Szczynski, for a couple of names, and yourself
yeah.
as well.
Or, yeah, yeah. Or Fontaine, Chris Fontaine.
Chris Fontaine, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It would definitely be nice to get him here.
Brennan, do you have anything else for Travis?
No, that's it, Travis. Congratulations, and you put on a great show, and hopefully we see you back in Pride very soon.
Well, I'm going to do what I can, right? I'm just going to keep at her, and I appreciate everything that everybody does to help me out along my way, right? I don't forget where I come from when I train, so... Everybody that's helped me out, I always like to make sure that they're right there with me. And thank you guys for the interview.
All right. The Gladiator, Travis right. Galbraith. Thanks again.
You guys take care.
You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network. And now, from his upscale 300-square-foot igloo in the trendy Icefield district of Vancouver, British Columbia, he knows what he's talking about. Here's your host, Kelsey Mowat.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and Brendan, I'll try my best to be a little bit more energetic here as we set sail on yet another program.
I appreciate that, Kelsey.
Anything for you, and of course all the adoring listeners as well.
You know, I can't tell you how many emails I get asking what's wrong with you, whether or not people can do something, and just from the general fans that, I don't know, they sense some kind of deep, deep melancholia in you.
Yeah, I should ask... The upper echelons of FCF if I can get a mailing address, not just an email address, so people can send me baked goods and gifts and whatnot.
Home remedies, poultices,
mm-hmm.
Plasters, mustard plasters,
like a PO
things
box.
Like that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
All right.
I'll have to check into that. But anyways, some interesting comments from both Travis Galbraith and Alex Schoenhauer, and of course with Travis, his debut, it was... Very interesting to hear someone's thoughts coming off, you know, his big debut. Travis has had some success up here in Canada, but has never fought on any international kind of card. So it was interesting to hear his excitement about his debut and what that experience was like for him.
Yeah, I guess that's almost one thing you have to get over, and it must be a big transition apparently from the spectacular nature of the show, the big Pride show. Having to overcome that puking sensation, as he referred to it.
And before we get into that, I wanted to go through a little review of Pride, of course, but before we get into that, just touching on the Alex Schoenhauer interview a little bit, and, you know, Alex has had some losses and some wins since he left UFC, and some big wins. It was Travis Euf and Hamanaka, as we mentioned, and he's had a couple tough losses as well, but definitely has come a long way as a fighter, and the thing that strikes me the most about that upcoming card is it is truly an unbelievable card. I mean, it doesn't necessarily feature household names, but for MMA enthusiasts, the upcoming November 2nd IFL card is really stacked. I mean, there's some amazing matchups.
Well, I've had an opportunity to follow the IFL all this year, and some of the fights have been really, really excellent, and the matchups have been fantastic, and you could tell that this is really fusing into something. It's certainly a marketable commodity. How well they're received in the States, I'm not sure exactly how well things are going over. We've heard talk that, you know, the Horn-Lindland fight wasn't hyped enough and didn't have that terrific a following. But you don't know really have it's tough to say who's watching on television, what kind of ratings they're getting, and things like that. But the product, as far as I'm concerned, the product is phenomenal.
All right, well, let's get back into Pride, the card, and discuss our picks. First off, I guess, you know, we both picked Nakamura to beat Travis Galbraith. We knew Travis was taking the fight on short notice. So we were both right on that pick, and we've discussed that fight already. Robbie Lawler versus Joey Vicenior. You went with Joey. I went with Robbie. And I think I've narrowed the gap, or I've tied this.
Have you, did you really go off Lawler? I can't remember.
Yeah, I did. Remember, I was like,
something in my gut that just tells me. Yeah, I remember now.
But very impressive.
That was your sixth sense. That was your shinin.
That's right.
Your shining.
Exactly.
Your MMA shining.
Yeah, I've got an appointment at the UBC parapsychology department this afternoon.
Really?
Test my sixth sense capabilities.
Really?
Yeah. In all seriousness, very impressive display by Robbie Lawler and Team Miletic. Yeah, it's quite clear that they practiced those flying knees quite a bit.
Yeah, that was a flying knee a la Spencer Fisher. And the fight in and of itself was kind of, it was great. Like, it was great to see the flying knee, and it's always great to see those spectacular knockouts. But kind of left with a sort of emptiness after that, because I thought that might have been one of the fights of the night, and it ended in, you know, under a minute, so I did it in another minute, and ended immediately anyway, so kind of disappointing, just because, you know, there was some, there was a great fight to be had between those two, so.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see where Robbie Lawler goes from here. He needed a big win over, you know, he's had some wins since he left the UFC, but, he's also had some losses, so this is a big win for him, and it'll be interesting to see what Pride decides to do with him from here. Phil Baroni over Nishima, we both picked that, of course, and you know, it pretty much went the route that I kind of said it, I thought it might, is Baroni would just take it down, played smart, and clearly he was the very dominant fighter in that respect over Nishima.
Yeah, he certainly was. I think Baroni seems to be... He seems to be in a powerful funk, and I know that people say he's going through some tough personal times. So I think that has tarnished a lot of the celebration and the jubilation that is usually accompanied with the Phil Baroni win. So it's unfortunate to see him like that.
Yeah.
And you can certainly see that reflected in the post-fight comments and the interviews and the press conference and such. So, yeah, I think that was certainly an expected win for Baroni, and it was his comments after the fight were actually quite funny.
Yeah,
claiming to have been taught the Kimura that day or something.
Yeah, Dan Henderson over Vitor Belfort. We both picked Dan Henderson. I think we both kind of thought that the fight would be drawn out, that Dan wouldn't necessarily win immediately, and he won. And the one thing that struck me, Brendan, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, is that when you remember Vitor Belfort's fight against Tito Ortiz, who's a fairly well-known takedown artist, not the Olympic caliber that Dan Henderson is, but definitely that's his pedigree, and he's quite good at it. And Vitor Belfort in their fight against Tito Ortiz had a fair amount of success stopping the takedown, keeping the fight standing, going to clinch. And against Henderson, even though he gave about 10 pounds to Belfort, and normally fights at middleweight, he was just so fast. His takedown, he was so much faster than Vitor and just powerful that it was just a real mismatch. You know, I was kind of not necessarily shocked. I guess I should have expected it, but Belfort just, he showed almost no ability to keep the fight standing.
Well, I don't think I thought that was probably the fight of the night, and I have to give, I don't know whether I've heard people describe this both ways. I've heard it described as, well, this is the fight where Hendo showed, you know, a glimmer of his old brilliance, because he's had a couple fights in a row now, two or three, the last three fights for me have been unspectacular of Hendo's. So is this the fight where Hendo comes back, or if you look at it from the other way, the other side, is this the fight where Vitor has finally demonstrated that, you know, he's done in the big leagues and he's basically lost it all in this fight? I'm not sure. I think it's probably a bit of each. I actually thought Vitor won that fight against Tito, so I was surprised at how handily Hendo, I guess, manhandled him on the ground, which basically pushed the pace and got the takedowns when he needed to. So I guess that just demonstrates, maybe demonstrates the ability of Hendo as a wrestler rather than simply a takedown guy like Tito.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, we talked about this in one of our very first episodes, and to which I had a couple Belfort fans didn't care for some of my comments. And I've always enjoyed watching Vitor. He's an exciting fighter. There's a certain kind of drama that accompanies him because he was so successful at such a young age, and he certainly has a huge fan following. And there's no question about it that he's a very talented jiu-jitsu practitioner. I'm not saying he's a world-class submission artist like a Nogueira or something like that, but he's definitely very capable, more than capable on the ground, great stand-up. But let's face it, if you look at his career over the last few years, he wins one, he loses one. He hasn't particularly beaten a lot of any top-flight competition in quite some time. And I think, to be honest, if it wasn't Vitor Belfort, if it wasn't for the fact that he had such a large following, he probably wouldn't be appearing on cards like Pride. Yes, I know he had some success in Cage Rage, which is kind of a fight feeder for Pride, but this, you know, I don't think it really anyone should be shocked at all that he lost, and Henderson really had no difficulties, just like we said, kind of expecting it to go the same route as Randy Couture defeating Belfort. Take him down, pound it out, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, the only way that I saw this fight going differently would have been if Hendo had chosen to like we had commented on, you know, stand up and work his stand up almost exclusively, like he did in his last couple of fights. But he certainly didn't go that route, and he took a very practical route. And I think this is one that Hendo didn't want to lose. I think he wanted to turn around his experience of Pride and get some momentum going into what will probably be a New Year's or February fight against the winner of the middleweight tournament.
Yeah, exactly. Josh Barnett versus Paolo Nastula, great fight. Your boy did quite well there, Brendan. Paolo Nastula surprising some people. And I thought that one thing that was kind of interesting was in some of the post-fight comments by Josh. He had a little bit of an edge to him. He looked like he sort of didn't really care for some of the questions that sort of alluded to the fact that he wasn't doing quite well in this fight until he pulled out the toehold win. He wanted to keep reiterating that he's been fighting a lot this year, and he certainly didn't care for some of those, didn't appear to care for questions that reflected that, the way the fight had kind of gone.
Yeah, I didn't know, I can never tell if Barnett, he's always has a very, he always has a very, I don't want to say, there's a certain aloofness about him, but there is a certain aloofness about him. I'm not sure if that captures if that's the word I want to capture right away, but he's always kind of has a bit of a smart attitude. I like that about him as well, but I think maybe there was something that hit a little bit close to home from that exchange, and I'm not sure. I think Barnett, I think he wanted, one of the things he wanted to probably make clear was that, you know, even though he had great success recently, that Nastula was a legitimate opponent. I think people thought that he was just going to breeze through him.
Mm.
And maybe he was taking a little bit of offense on behalf of Nastula.
Yeah, there was one comment where he said just that, you know, this is, you're talking about a world-class judo Olympic practitioner, and the fact that Nastula has only had a few fights and has lost a few, but if you look at who he's fought, Nogueira, and of course Barnett now, I mean, these are some of the best he's been thrown in immediately with no mixed martial arts experience against some of the best fighters in the world, and he's obviously progressing quite well. I mean, this guy is going to be a huge force, it would appear, over the next few years.
Well, the thing is, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Nastula, because he's fairly old. I would like to see him fight a little bit more. I would like to see him get worked up a little bit more, but I think they rushed him just really because of his age, and like he's, like many people have pointed out, he was really thrown to the wolves when he came into Pride. But if you're going to fight in heavyweight in Pride, there's really not many more animals you can be thrown to. You know, there's not too many goats in the heavyweight division in Pride. Maybe they could have worked him up a little bit more, but we'll see. We'll see what happens to him there. He's actually. Not a bad, not a bad fighter to watch. It would be interesting to see what he could do inside a cage, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Unless I want to get into talking about the heavyweight picture, especially in Pride. So unless you've got something to say about Mauricio Shogun Rua's win over Randleman, it was a very impressive knee bar.
The only thing that was remarkable about that fight for me was the confidence that Shogun had in pursuing those submissions, because you could tell in the submission game these days, a lot of people are going, when they do go for submissions, if they're not completely and utterly confident on the ground, like someone like a Nogueira, they're going for high percentage submissions and not giving up dominant positions in order to do that. And Shogun actually showed a lot of courage, I think, and a lot of conviction in his ability in going and transitioning between a couple of different, he did have that toe hold at the beginning and then ended up finishing with the knee bar. And that is really, I think, remarkable, because he was expending a lot of energy, and that's not what he's known for. So I thought that was actually a remarkable win on his part, and it was painful to watch Randleman's face gutting it out through a couple of those different submissions. And finally, I hope he wasn't injured, but it was disappointing because I thought he had more to offer in that fight as well. Certainly, that takedown demonstrated that he had the first takedown demonstrated that he had some kind of agenda.
Yeah, well, there's no question. I mean, that fight, it definitely reflects the fact that Shogun is a very well-rounded fighter and is definitely going to be a force to be reckoned with, not just because of his stand-up capabilities. So you're right, and it definitely was worth mentioning. But let's get into Mark Coleman versus Fedor Emelianenko. Really no surprise here. I really have to give credit to Mark Coleman. He showed a ton of heart in this fight. Where does Pride go now? You always hear about this problem of the lack of heavyweights. It appeared that there was some kind of kidding that Fedor said he wanted to fight Josh Barnett next in the post-fight press conference.
No, he wanted to compete against him next in a vodka drinking contest.
Oh, right. But, that's kind of what some people have been discussing, just purely because those two have not fought yet. But do you really think that's a valid way for Pride to go, Brendan, or do they really have no option? I mean, Josh has lost to Krokop a few times. Is it too fast? Is it too much of a quick turnaround right now to have Krokop Fedor Part 2?
I think that's going to be... I would be surprised if that wasn't their New Year's fight, because if it's not their New Year's fight, then they have to wait. Probably knowing Pride, they have to wait a whole other year until next New Year's, because that's going to be the big fight. But that being said, there's no reason why Barnett couldn't have a title shot. Why not?
Yeah.
I guess the only person who could possibly take objection to that would be Krokop. And if Krokop's not ready, then Barnett's the only other obvious person to step in there. They haven't fought yet. Barnett's on a roll. And I can't see anyone taking offense to that except for possibly Krokop.
I think I'd rather see Josh Barnett versus Fedor, to be honest. I've always been one of those more traditional people when it comes to this. And that's something sometimes I don't care for in mixed martial arts, is these really fast turnaround fights. I mean, I understand sometimes if there's a lot of controversy, very controversial decision or early stoppage, etc., sometimes there's a necessity for that. But Fedor beat Krokop. There was no question about it. It wasn't too long ago. And I have always cared for the hype. I like it where, there's a lot more at stake. And obviously there would be if they were to fight at New Year's. But personally, I would like to see Krokop and Fedor, further down the road rather than right away.
For Pride, I think it costs a lot of money for Fedor to fight. And I think those are his next two fights, whichever order they happen in, I think is more or less irrelevant to most people. Both of them would be great New Year's fights, and I think much of it probably just depends on Krokop. If Krokop thinks he's ready to go, then I wouldn't be surprised if he fought Fedor on New Year's Eve on their big show. And I wouldn't be surprised if Fedor actually fought Barnett in America. That's the obvious thing to do, but that's not going to be a New Year's show. So,
well, I think the next show is supposed to be in February or March, isn't it? So there's no way Fedor's going to...
February 24th.
Yeah, so there's no way they're going to have Fedor fight New Year's and then February as well.
Yeah, well, that's enough. That's enough time. It's almost 3 months, so...
They wouldn't do it, man. There's no... I mean, if you just look at how... With Fedor, the state of his hands, etc., to me, it seems that they're trying to keep him down to probably two fights a year, and I just... There's no way. I can't see them doing Krokop, having Fedor, Krokop, New Year's, and then Barnett, or vice versa, within 3 months.
This is the interesting question, is how much are they going to tie the two promotions together. It seems to me, like I said on the last show, it seems to me that the outcomes of any of these fights in America would be almost irrelevant to the next big prize show in Japan. So are they going to have two streams, or they're going to have two narratives, as it were, into one Japanese and one American, or are they going to tie the two together at some point? And that will be, I think that will determine really the order that people fight in and who gets the fight where.
One final thing, what did you think of the rant by Wanderlei Silva? I thought it was very dramatic, calling out Chuck Liddell, for those people who didn't get the pay-per-view, stating that Chuck Liddell is avoiding Wanderlei Silva. And you have to think that this is going to make the ongoing media back and forth between Pride and UFC on whose fault it is that they're not doing joint promotions, joint fights yet, especially the Chuck Liddell Wanderlei, why it hasn't happened yet. I thought that was an interesting development, having Wanderlei come out and say that.
Yeah. I was very surprised that Dana White entertained this to begin with, because I don't think the UFC has anything to gain by Wanderlei fighting Chuck. Now, that being said, Dana has done some remarkable things, you know, bringing back Jeremy Horn into the UFC, bringing back BJ Penn, bringing back Tito Ortiz, and I don't think he had to do any of that. So this is having Wanderlei, when Wanderlei actually stepped in the ring, I almost crapped my pants the first time, right?
Yeah.
So I don't. But that being said, I don't think strategically they don't have to do it. It's Pride who has to make. It's Pride who has to gain ground in the U.S. It's Pride who has to gain notoriety. What does Dana White have to gain by Chuck Liddell beating a guy who no one has ever heard of? You know, I'm not saying no one has ever heard of in terms of hardcore MMA fans, but I'm saying no one who's anyone's ever heard of in terms of the people who have been following MMA since the reality show, which is, you know, a remarkable portion of their audience. So.
Well, I agree with that to an extent. I do think, though, that part of the reason I suspect that there probably isn't as much push from the UFC to do this fight anymore is just because Wanderlei has actually lost a couple times in the last year. So, and regardless of whether or not, you know, against Crow Cop, you can argue the merits of heavyweight.
Well, Dana said that, but that's an excuse.
It could be, but, I mean, is that, you know, back then, let's face it, though, when they were talking, when this first became an issue and Wanderlei was, came to the UFC, etc. I mean, Wanderlei was the running champion, undefeated for something like 5 years at the time.
Yeah.
And that is easier to market even to these fans who maybe aren't familiar with him. Hey, this is the guy that hasn't lost a fight in 5 years. He fights in Japan. Then now, since he's lost to a Rona once and he's lost to Crow Cop, I don't know. What the real reason is. I still hope as a fan that it of course happens. So
yeah, and me too. Of course, I'd love to see the fight. But the question, when you look at why these things aren't happening, you look at the interests of the individuals who are making the choices. Is it in Pride's interest for Wanderlei to fight Chuck? Yes. Is it in UFC's interest? No.
Well, maybe in a year, and it'd be unfortunate if we have to wait that long. But maybe in a year, Pride will have, you know, had a few more shows in the States. Wanderlei Silva will be more of a household name in the States. And maybe it'll just be a fact that for both promotions, there'll be so much money to be made and so much exposure to be gained that, you know, they have to put this fight together. Let's hope.
Yeah, I guess it must have been Wanderlei's last fight that kept him out of this card, because I thought that's one of the ways they would have established the ground for that next fight. Would be having him fight on this card, but I guess maybe he wasn't ready to go.
All right, buddy. I gotta go too. Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.